At a time when investors are confronted with market volatility and a variety of challenges fueled by the uncertainty of inflation, unsettled geopolitical tensions, and economic pressures, Luke Guerrero stands ready to take your finance and investment questions and share his unbiased answers. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. It is Monday, April 22nd, 2024, and my name is Luke Guerrero, and I will be your host over this next hour. And hopefully, the weekend was as restful for all of you as it was for me. You know, this is the last full trading week of April. Next week is a mixture of both April and May, and certainly it's been an exciting month so far, and we've talked a lot about why over the past couple weeks, and we will continue to do that today, because our goal here is to help you leave a better educated, better investor than when you got here. And to that end, we like to offer some educational topics. We like to talk about the news. We like to talk about some things that have happened that will affect finance, the market, the economy, individual businesses. But more importantly, we'd like to hear from you, because you are the one that drives this show. Your finance and investment questions help all of us learn and all of us become better investors. That being said, we'll talk about the market performance today, as well as run down some show topics in a bit. But let's get to our first caller question now.
Hi, Justin or Steve. I wanted to get your opinion on ticker symbol STLD Steel Dynamics. I'm up about 45% right now and wanted to know your thoughts on the sector as a whole and if you think the stock will continue the uptrend. What should I look out for as potential sell signals? Thank you very much for your time.
So ticker STLD is Steel Dynamics, Inc., and they manufacture steel products, do metal recycling, but most of their revenue comes directly from the manufacture of steel, about 67% of their revenue. And so if you take a look at where the sales growth and the net margins have been over the past couple of years, they've been improving. So from 2021 into 2022, and then eventually into 2023, when the price of steel was going up, their margins got better. Their sales growth was pretty significant. From 2022 into 2023, that kind of tapered off a little bit, and their margins have been compressing as a result. And so over the past four quarters, Steel Dynamics actually have missed earnings estimates, which is typically when stock prices tend to react, right? They don't react based upon what the figure itself is, but the how that figure relates to the consensus estimate. So missing tends to drive stock prices down. But because steel has been doing well, this company has been doing well as well this year. Year to date, they're up about 16%. Over the past 52 weeks, they're up about 24%. And the relative strength has kind of stayed pretty stable over the past 6 months, but their profitability and their cash flow have been falling. Now, the thing you got to know about this name is if you're looking to take a position in it, right now would not be the time. Why is that? That's because they are reporting earnings the 23rd. And so a lot of price movements around earnings time tend to be people that are taking positions and bets based upon where they think their earnings to go, or rather where they think their earnings will go. And so the question was, what should you be looking out for before you start to sell this name? And for me, it's see how their cost of goods sold, see how the revenue growth looks over the past quarter. Like I said, they've missed three of the past four. If you have that consistent miss, then you're going to tend to see this five-year annualized growth rate of 9.7%, which the market has been pricing in terms of where this stock price has been going, fall. Now, you said you're up about 40, 45%. Absolutely, I would start to take profit. I don't see any reason why, especially given where this administration is trying to take tariffs on Chinese steel, why you would want to fully divest. But if you're up that much, I absolutely think you should start to take profit and probably want to do it before earnings, because it could easily go any direction. It could be pretty volatile over the next couple of days. Thanks for the call. Now, we've got a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes or so, and here's some of what we have time permitting. My main focus point concerns this question, or rather these questions. And it's what caused this year's stock market rally to stall, and what happens next? Markets had a pretty rocky slide last week, as you all know, with the NASDAQ and S&P 500 enduring their longest downturn since October of 2022. And so we'll talk about the 2024 stock market rally coming out of the beginning of the year, inflation, rate cuts, how those play a role in what's been going on, and how the labor market and the job outlook could affect markets and rates going forward. Also, we'll be talking a little bit about the New York Stock Exchange and how the New York Stock Exchange put out a survey recently trying to garner responses from both retail and institutional managers, or rather investors, and figure out, is there any appetite for a 24/7 stock market? We'll also touch a little bit about how Venezuela is accelerating its move to cryptocurrency as a way to protect itself against some of the sanctions that it has seen and countries like Russia have seen, something we've been talking about for quite some time. And should we have some time at the end of the show, we'll also talk about the oil market's kind of subdued reaction to the Israeli retaliation on Iran in the wake of the strikes that happened a couple weeks ago, and what that tells us about the oil market as a whole. Now we're going into a short break, and on the other side, we'll talk about today's market activity. Please remember, you can call anytime and leave your questions on the InvestTalk voice bank, or you can call us now and talk to me live at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk callers make each podcast unique.
I was calling about Intel, if it's worth holding on to, or should I sell it?
Their questions are curious.
Hello, I have saved up around $80,000, and I was wondering what I should do to make it grow.
Careful.
Oh, I'm just wondering, is this a value trap? Because it looks like it's gone down quite a bit.
Concerned.
It's taken quite the tumble today. I've been trying to get out of this position for a while. I think I waited too long.
And clever.
It does seem to be situated in some areas of expanding population.
And Justin Klein, Steve Peasley, and now Luke Guerrero are always ready with their unbiased answers.
And this is, it looks like a classic example of chasing yield. Don't chase the yield.
Next 12 months price to earnings is around 30. I just don't see it at this price.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART. You've got finance and investment questions. And Luke Guerrero is here taking your calls live. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now let's talk a little bit about the market today. U.S. stocks ended higher, certainly after last week. It's a good sign of the rally, maybe taking a second go at it, but really off best levels. You saw in the last hour of trading, the market kind of fell off a little bit. And like I said, that's after the S&P last week logged its third straight weekly pullback, the NASDAQ 100 dropping nearly 5.5%, which was its biggest weekly decline since November of 2022. And in the wake of that, big tech was mostly higher today, as were, let's see, airlines, semis were up, banks were doing well, asset managers were doing well. And really detracting from overall market performance was telecoms. Verizon did particularly poorly. Entertainment didn't do so well. Healthcare distributors and oil services, as well as precious metals, were down today relative to the rest of the market. Gold finished down 2.8%, its worst session in more than a year. And crude oil finished down as well. You know, I think overall the market bounce kind of gained some traction today. And that was primarily due to some people thinking, myself included maybe, that the sell-off was more of a technical than a fundamental thing that was going on. You know, the 5.5% drawdown that we've seen from the recent peak is kind of orderly and a little bit shallow, especially compared to some historical drawdowns in the wake of some robust rallies. And overall, I think it was a big benefit to the market that you saw kind of a lack of further escalation of Middle East tensions. And so looking forward, we have the start of big tech earnings, which will kind of put a focus on those high-profile secular growth themes, particularly artificial intelligence. From an economic perspective, it looks like the calendar is pretty quiet this week. It was quiet today, but we will get Q1 advanced GDP on Thursday, as well as core PCE inflation on Friday. We all know, if you've been listening, that that is the Fed's preferred metric when looking at inflation, so that will certainly perhaps move some markets. Now let's keep moving forward and swing back to the InvestTalk voice bank for a question from a listener in Seattle.
Hello, Justin. This is Lewis from Seattle. I'm calling about the company Zostis, ticker symbol ZTS. About a week ago, the company had some bad press from the Wall Street Journal, dropping the price to a point where I had set an alarm to purchase. I bought a position in my IRA to hold for the long term. I like the company's growing cash flow and margins, but not crazy about their debt. do you feel that it would be safe to continue to add on, or do you feel that their current situation would cause the price to drop more and I should wait? Thank you for your advice and have a good day. Bye.
So Zoetis, ticker ZTS, hopefully that's how you pronounce it, is a biopharmaceutical company, right? They do discovery and creating new drugs. And what the caller was hinting at is that last week they got in some trouble because it turns out that one of their, I don't know if it was one of their new drugs or a drug that they already had, but they were using it on animals and the animals got sick. It was arthritis medication. And so because of that, you saw kind of a steep drop off in the past week from about 165 to where it is today, which is 145. And, you know, from a debt perspective, about $6 billion in debt on a $67 billion market cap company, that's nothing to worry about. Their interest expense ratio, remember the interest coverage ratio, which is how much you earn and how that covers your debt expenses, your interest expense. It's about 10 times. So they're not highly levered at all. Their cash flow has been improving. Their profitability has been pretty stable. And up until about January, their relative strength looked good as well. Over the past couple of years, they've been buying back shares. They have a pretty consistent dividend that's sitting at about 1.2% right now. But, you know, I think anytime you have, for a drug company, news come out that there are adverse side effects to their new medications or any medications that they have, I think it's probably safe to stay away for a bit. And the reason why is because when that occurs, you tend to have increased regulatory scrutiny. And the market certainly reacted to this news. It could consolidate where it is, but I think there's still a little bit of risk that should subsequent news come out about this drug in particular, it'll be a negative market reaction as well. So it kind of lost its support, which was at about 150 over the past year. I think it's going to probably most likely head a little bit lower to try and find some new support. From a fundamental perspective, it looks good. I have nothing really against this company as a long-term hold, but you could see some short-term volatility, especially given that earnings is coming next week, May 2nd. So I would hold off till after earnings, make sure in the wake of all of this news that the dust settles before I would invest more in this company. Thanks for the call. Now, we got plenty of time. Let's get into it. So let's talk about our main focus point today, which concerns this question or these questions. What caused this year's stock market rally to stall and what happens next? And so as we mentioned at the top, really what you have to understand about the 2024 stock market rally and what is causing its stall is twofold, really one thing, which is inflation, rate cuts, that's all lumped into one group, and the labor market. And so after a strong start to 2024, the rally has kind of hit a speed bump in April. Since the start of this month, before the rally today, the S&P 500 index had dropped 4.6%, which is on track to be its first negative month since last October. Now, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is barely holding onto its gains for this year, up only about 20 basis points. Again, this was going till Friday of last week. And the NASDAQ Composite has managed a almost 4% increase year to date. And it's not just about price movements, right? It's about investor sentiment as well. CNN's Fear and Greed Index moved after last week from greed to fear. And so we have to take a step back and say, what is driving this shift? And the answer is several factors. One is economic data and inflation, and it's been pretty robust. And sometimes in these situations, good news is in fact bad news. If the market is hoping for rate cuts and there continues to be robust economic news, the Fed really has no reason to cut. And so you'll recall that in March, we had 303,000 jobs added, far exceeding expectations. Not only that, consumer spending has continued to rise despite higher interest rates. And strong economic performance has led a lot of analysts, the market as a whole, to adjust and revise their expectations for when the Fed is going to start cutting interest rates, now possibly going even into September. Another thing that has affected the rally is the Federal Reserve stance itself. You had many voting members and non-voting members alike talking about how we may need to have rates higher for longer. And in fact, Jerome Powell has now indicated that any rate cuts will likely be delayed until there's clearer signs of moderating inflation. There's also some global factors, tensions in the Middle East, particularly what that says about oil prices and how that affects global supply chains. and really overall just geopolitical uncertainty that contributes to investor caution, understandably, and market volatility. Now, we talked about the first three, and we'll talk about the next three after we come back from this break. And after we come back, we'll also hear from Dan from Walnut Creek, because he will be next before we finish this focus point. I'm Luke Guerrero, and this is InvestTalk. And if you want to talk to me, please call now at 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to Dan in Walnut Creek, who's calling in live. It was a question about brokerage accounts. How can we help you today?
Yeah, Luke, thank you for taking my call. And I was wondering, you know, if someone was to, like, to hack into my computer and get a hold of my passwords and such, and they got in my brokerage account, sold my stocks, transferred the money out, would I be liable for that, or would the I'm with Merrill Edge, and or would they be liable for that?
You know, that's an interesting question, and it's a legal question, so it's certainly not in my area of expertise. But I do imagine that given cybersecurity is such an important and trust is such an important aspect of the brokerage industry, I think it would be pretty difficult for somebody to break into your brokerage account and execute trades. Are you trying to suggest, like, if somebody hacks into your home computer and does trades through there and gets your passwords or within their system?
Somehow they get a hold of my password and they know I have
it's an interesting question. Here's what I would say, because I don't exactly know the answer to that, because again, it's a legal liability question. But what I would say is, anytime you can, given how important security is, I would always set up two-factor authentication. I every morning pretty much check my email, and some random person's trying to log into my Microsoft account. And the reason they can't get in is because I have to authorize it from my cell phone. And so you may find, like I do over time, I had a friend who didn't have two-factor authentication in his checking account, the big bank he used a checking account for, and someone drained his checking account, authorized transactions. So I think there are some easy ways that we can protect ourselves. I think that's the most important part. How can you protect yourself? And one of those is to, whenever you can, set up that two-factor authentication to make it as difficult as possible for those bad actors to take advantage of you. But from the liability perspective, I honestly don't know the answer to that question.
Great. Well, thanks very much for the tip. I appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for the call. We also have another live call from Dave in Ohio, who has a question about Southern Copper. Do you own it, or are you looking to buy it?
I was looking at buying it. It's been coming down. And thanks, Luke, for taking my call. Your thoughts on the company, and will be a good buy point?
Yeah, well, Southern Copper is actually a name we hold for clients. It's had quite the performance over the past 52 weeks, right? Over the past year, they're up about 41%, and it is the largest copper company. And so I've spoken before about why you would invest in this type of company rather than a commodity, and it's because they can smooth out the volatility, and commodity prices tend to be pretty volatile. Now, historically speaking, copper has been a name that has really been a harbinger for how the industrial expansion has gone, right? They call it Dr. Copper. And now more than ever, what it really is it is an in-demand input into the green revolution. And so over the next 10 years, I would expect that copper demand would go up pretty significantly. That being said, it's also important to buy a company at a good price. And so I certainly wouldn't be selling Southern Copper if I owned it, but right now it's trading at a price to book of about 11.8 after this run-up. Its forward-looking PDE is about 30. So until that comes down closer to its average of about 6, maybe when this thing, if it breaks down below 100, that's when I would start to be looking to buy a little bit more. It just looks a little overbought to me, to be honest. Again, it's not a reason to sell it, but if you're looking to make an investment, I would wait for it to come down a bit before I did that. Thanks for the call.
Okay. Thank you.
Now, before we went to a break and answered some questions, we were talking about this most recent rally and the three of the six factors that have really been contributing to why it's fallen off. economic data, the Federal Reserve stance, and some of those global factors, the exogenous macro factors, like tension, rising tensions in the Middle East. And so those are the only things that have contributed to the stymieing of this rally. One is bond yields, right? Bond yields have spiked, with the 10-year yield reaching 4.65% as of last week. And so what that really tells us is that bond investors expect interest rates to remain elevated for an extended period of time. So this goes back to the whole inflation rate cut scenario. And investors are coming to terms with the fact, something we've been saying, which is higher for longer is generally going to be the case. Another is corporate earnings. Overall, corporate earnings growth has been pretty modest. There hasn't been any downward shocks, really, but it's been at about 90 basis points, so nothing really to be excited about. And lastly, investor behavior, which has been shifting more and more towards safer assets, notably gold. Gold has rallied pretty significantly over the past year, and we talked about a funny but important story about how much gold is being sold and bought at Costco, about $200 million worth every month. So more likely than not, it seems like April is the start of a repricing trend and investors should brace for some continued volatility. But that really, for long-term investors, is a good thing, as the next few months may offer good prices on great companies and many opportunities to further invest. Now, the next Invest Talk, we'll look into the story behind this question. Can you make IRA contributions at any age? Or rather, you can make IRA contributions at any age. But should you? Traditional IRA contributions with RMD age may make sense, but it depends on your tax situation. We'll get into dig into this topic tomorrow, but for now, I'm Luke Guerrero, and I'm ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
Got a question for Justin or Luke? You're the best person to ask it.
Is it a good idea to sell your losses in a Roth IRA and just use whatever you have left to reinvest into better stocks?
InvestTalk is ready 24/7.
I would really appreciate if you could give me an entry point for a company called Medtronic, MDT.
Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART, or post your questions on the InvestTalk YouTube channel.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It is official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
This is InvestTalk. Luke Guerrero is here, taking your calls live. 888-99-CHART.
This is Kevin calling from La Crescenta, California again. I have a question regarding municipal bonds. I'm in California and I'm in the highest tax bracket. I'm wondering if it's a good strategy to buy municipal bonds that have a high coupon rate, high yield to maturity, say over 5%, and then a coupon rate of like 6%, but then buy them over par so that, you know, I get the interest annually and don't pay taxes on it, and then at the maturity I can end up with a loss, a capital gains loss that I can use to deduct against my gains in the year that the bond matures. And these are pretty long dated bonds, or they mature far out in the future, so I'm wondering if you think that's a good strategy for the next 8 to 10 year kind of range. I look forward to hearing your answer on the show. Thanks again for all your help.
So it's an interesting question and certainly an interesting strategy. So let's dissect it a little bit. Municipal bonds tend to give you, well, they certainly give you federal exemption from the interest income and can give you state and local tax exemption as well. And that is solely for the interest income. So any capital gain, you don't get tax exemption for. That sounds great, but generally speaking, municipal bonds are going to pay lower coupons. And that's because you do get that tax benefit. And a lot of people love more than anything to beat the tax man. I understand that. But generally speaking, municipal bonds should only be purchased for people like the caller who are in a high income bracket. Now, the strategy itself could be good. You're getting interest-free income, definitely federally, maybe even state and local, depending on the bond. And you could recognize a loss once the bond reaches maturity or if you decide to sell it as it gets closer, as it moves back to par. But there are a lot of things to consider. One is, again, as much as you do love beating the tax man, your net return is what you should be concerned about. It could be possible that after taxes, you could invest in a like-kind bond that is at a discount, and you could actually be more beneficial from even paying those taxes. So you should always be thinking about your after-tax return, not just about paying the fewest taxes. It's about those new dollars coming in. Another thing to consider is, why is it trading at a premium? Maybe it's trading at a premium because it's a callable bond. What happens if they call that bond early? Now you're not getting that interest income that's tax deductible anymore. And they may even call that bond at a premium beyond what you paid. And now you're paying taxes on that gain. So I think it can be an interesting strategy, but it can also be a complex strategy because there are a lot of things that go into bond pricing. So keep all of that in mind. I'm not saying don't go for it. It certainly could be beneficial from a tax perspective, but there are a lot of things, and those are just some of them to think about. Thanks for the call. Now let's shift gears back to a talking point today that focuses on the New York Stock Exchange and a potentially radical change. And that change would be making the exchange 24/7, because apparently they don't want me to sleep and they don't want you to sleep. And so it's polling market participants on this idea. And that survey showed growing interest in trading blue chip stocks, which tend to be the most liquid, overnight between the hours of 8 p.m. and 4 a.m. Eastern. And so in essence, this is all in a response to really crypto, in a way, that you can trade 24/7, and the rise of retail investor activity in the wake of the coronavirus pandemic lockdowns. And so due to this demand, some retail brokers are actually already doing this. Robinhood and Interactive Brokers offer a 24-hour weekday access to U.S. stocks, only on the weekday, not on the weekends, with trades either matched with their internal holdings or conducted via a dark pool trading venue, where they're often paired with Asian retail investors because it's daytime over in Asia during these trading hours. And so the New York Stock Exchange asked respondents some key questions. First, whether they thought round-the-clock stock trading should take place on weekends and not just the weekday. How investors should be protected from price swings because, frankly, it would be pretty low liquidity, right? And so because of that, there'd be a lot of volatility. And also how respondents would staff any overnight sessions. And all this comes at a time when a startup, 24 Exchange, which is backed by Stephen Cohen's .72 Venture Fund, is seeking SEC approval to launch the first round-the-clock exchange. And so because of that, the SEC has several months to scrutinize the plans, but there are definitely some important questions that they're going to have to ask. How many people are even going to participate? How will clearinghouses, who are the ones that make sure trades don't default generally within these exchanges, how do they help settle trades? Are they going to have to keep the same set hours to troubleshoot? So will it happen? I don't know. Will the SEC, what are they going to decide? Again, who knows? I think, frankly, I'm in favor of it. I think that you try and set up a regulatory regime to give market participants as much ability to trade in and out of assets at any given time. And then from there, it's a market. See what those people think. See if there's actually volume that comes. But overall, I think this is one of the knock-on effects that I saw coming when crypto trading became a thing. And that is, you know, news happens. Happens on the weekend. Markets can't react until Monday, generally. So I think overall, as instantaneous as possible market reaction to news is always a good thing because it's going to drive asset prices towards what their fair value is. Now we have another live call, Frank from San Mateo, and he has a question about a new company that is not public yet.
Hi. I was just reading Barron's, and it was very intriguing because it, backing up against this NVIDIA, and the thing that caught my attention was its chip is, 72 inches or something like that. But the statement was it can do in, one day what NVIDIA can do in a month, and I was thinking, I just wanted somebody to kind of evaluate the possibility of this thing kind of taking over from NVIDIA. I just didn't know if you had an opinion on that.
Yeah, well, so is this a startup company, or what's the name of this company?
Yes, sir. The company is founded by Andrew Fieldman. The name of it is Cerebras, Cerebras Systems. It's not yet. It hasn't done an IPO, and it builds these microchips that are just gigantic. NVIDIA's chip is 1 inch by 1 inch, and this thing is the whole chip is 72 inches. And the statement somewhere in the article was, I thought it was interesting, that, they can do in one day what NVIDIA does in 1 month. And I thought, and they're building these chips, and I don't know if they're selling them or just, letting people subscribe to the use of their computers. And I didn't know if you knew anything about it, but I just thought, if speed is what we're looking at for all these people to run this data down, I sure thought this company could claim a lot of work away from NVIDIA. I didn't know if you had an opinion, but anyway.
No, I mean, certainly it's an interesting question. I think there's a lot to consider here. One is a private company. Therefore, us as investors, we don't really have access to it. And so secondarily, because we investors don't have access to it, a public company, NVIDIA, is going to have a lot better time raising capital. So if somebody tries to take a slice out of NVIDIA's business, they have the benefit of actually having revenue. They actually have money coming in. They actually have cash flow. They're a public company. They have an ability to raise capital pretty easily. And frankly, their shares are pretty in demand. And so, anytime that these public companies come out and say, we have this that beats this, or rather when a private company comes out and says, we have this new product that beats a public company, my reaction is, sounds good. It sounds to me like there are some investment banks trying to take you on a roadshow to bring you public and boost up your IPO. And I'll check you out in a year. Once you actually have a history, all your owners' locked up shares have been sold, and I can get some fundamental analysis of you. So, I mean, this sounds very interesting. From our perspective, we certainly can't invest in it yet, but maybe something to keep an eye on. Thanks for the tip.
Yeah, thanks for talking about it. Thanks again.
Of course. Now, I hope you've been telling your friends about our Invest Talk audio podcast and how it's also posted in video format on our YouTube channel. It seems that every day now we receive finance and investment questions from the comment section of our Invest Talk YouTube channel. And here's one that came in recently. What about ticker symbol ADC for a long-term investment in my Roth? I don't have any REITs in my portfolio, and I started a small position at the current price. I'm not yield chasing, but the potential for growth seems promising if interest rates ever head down from this sticky inflation. Any thoughts on a long-term hold and a price point? So ADC is Agri Realty Corporation. I feel like we looked at this recently, and it is a retail REIT. Now, anytime we look at REITs, what we want to do first is we want to take a look at how its revenue is exposed, where its properties, is it regionally diverse? Does it have different types of tenants, right? Because if you were all focused in one, it's not very helpful. And so it looks like it's pretty regionally diverse. They got properties in Florida, Michigan, New York, Georgia, the South, the Northeast. We like that. That's a good thing. Secondarily, we want to take a look at its debt levels. Does it have too much long-term debt? It's got $2.4 billion on debt on a $5.7 billion market cap company. And so that's pretty good for a REIT, actually. And year to date, it's only down about 10%. I think that's beating the industry. Yeah, just slightly. It's beating the industry by about a percentage point in 2024. And I think this REIT specifically has had some pretty good cash flow growth as well as profitability growth. It's not too highly highly levered, which is a good thing. So that means it has room to raise more debt capital, raise more equity capital if it needs, make further investments. And like you said, now would be a good time to invest in REITs if you believe that interest rates are going down, or at least there's going to be a stable path of interest rates going forward. I think that interest rates are probably going to be higher for longer. I think maybe REITs still have an opportunity to fall as well. But certainly if you don't have any real estate exposure, you're looking for real estate exposure, you're a long-term investor. This seems to be a company that has a pretty consistent dividend over the years, low debt, a lot of room to grow. Thanks for watching and leaving a comment. Here's another question that came into our YouTube channel because we got plenty of time to answer it. And that is, interested to hear your thoughts on NLCP, New Lake Capital Partners. It is an over-the-counter REIT in the cannabis sector. From what I can see, it has minimal debt and with some growth. What do you think of its valuation, and how do you think descheduling or legalization would affect the company if that ever happens? So New Lake Capital Partners is a very, very small company. Its market cap is $368 million. And in terms of debt, it actually has quite a bit of debt. Let me check something else just to make sure that we got the correct debt figures here. And so while that's pulling up, no, they have about $3 million in debt. So they don't have really any debt at all. Their cash flow has been improving. Their profitability has been improving. And their price performance has been pretty good over the past year. Where most REITs are down, they are up 14% year-to-date, 45% over the past 52 weeks. For me, frankly, it's a high-risk, high-reward play. It's a very small REIT. They got no debt, which is good. But their future is going to be tied to the regulatory burden associated with cannabis. We're in an election year. We don't know what's going to happen. Certainly, both candidates have differing opinions on cannabis legalization. So if you're willing to take the risk, go for it. If not, I think this is a little too rich for my blood. In terms of risk, it's an over-the-counter REIT. It's very small. One thing they got going for them is decent growth and no debt. But again, for me, I think the regulatory issues here seem to be a little bit too risky for myself. Now, this is InvestTalk now with more than 58 million downloads. Let's keep moving and play another question that came in earlier to 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Luke and Justin, Matt from South Florida. Wanted to call to get your opinion on Paymentus. Ticker symbol PAY. These guys compete with companies like ACI Worldwide and Repay. Looking to bolster my payments holdings beyond companies like PayPal to more specific companies. Again, ticker symbol PAY. Looking for your opinion on a 3 to 5 year hold. Thank you.
So ticker PAY is Paymentus, which honestly I think is a great name for a company. And it is a cloud-based bill payment technology. It's decent-sized small cap. It's kind of in the mid-range of small caps, $2.3 billion. And year-to-date, it's done pretty well, up 8%, up 136% over the past year. Now, it looks like their revenue growth is kind of all over the place. They didn't grow much until the pandemic happened. Then they started growing a little bit. They're set to grow by about 15% this year, which is pretty significant. They've had a run-up over the past year, so their shares look a little bit overbought to me, and the market tends to agree with me. Short interest at 6.18%. They have very minimal debt, only $11 million in debt. And again, they're a relatively new company in terms of their public reporting, and so their cash flow has been pretty steadily increasing, as has their profitability. One thing to note is they had some blowout Q4 guidance, some blowout Q4 earnings and pretty strong guidance. So, you know, for me, looking at this company that is very, very highly valued from a relative valuation perspective, forward-looking price earnings is 48. If this doesn't hit its projected earnings, I think you're going to see a pretty steep drop-off come May 1st. So, you know, if they continue their growth trajectory over the past two years into this quarter, maybe I would consider buying it if their forward-looking guidance brings its forward-looking price earnings multiple down to something way more realistic than 48. But where it's priced at right now, I think I'd have to pass on this one. Now we're going to head into a short break. As always, we enjoy answering your voice bank calls and your live calls during the podcast when you call into 888-99-CHART. Looking forward to talking to Paul from Walnut Creek when we get back from this break.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many variables. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now we have someone calling in live, Paul from Walnut Creek, who has a question about Uber. Do you own it or are you looking to buy it?
I own it in a diversified account. I have a small position in it. And it's taken a step back here in the near term. I just wanted to get your take on timing. I like it long term, but you know, given the current state of the market, et cetera, I'm wondering if I should put it to the sidelines, get rid of it, and maybe buy it back in the future at a better buy point.
Yeah, well, so, you know, everyone knows what Uber is. Certainly, if you've left the house and didn't feel like driving, it's a big part of everybody's life. And, you know, I think the Uber benefited from two things over the past year. One is the market did very poorly in 2022. And so every tech name, every name did poorly. And then secondarily, they also made profit for the first time in 2023. And so they've had a pretty significant run up over the past year. 123% is what they're up right now. But, you know, I think that where it's priced at right now, its relative valuation, it's about 12 times price to book, 46 forward-looking price to earnings. I think what you saw last week is a rotation out of those growthy tech names, and you very well may see that over the next couple months. So, you know, I may not trim all of it if you still want to hold on to it. It sounds like it's a smaller part of your diversified portfolio, but certainly, you know, you're probably up a significant amount. I would at least think about taking profits as this rotation seems like it's going to be a theme over the next couple months. Thanks for the call. Now, before we head off, I want to talk a little bit about a shift in the oil industry. And Venezuela's PDVSA, in the wake of U.S. sanctions, is increasingly turning to digital currencies. Specifically, USDT, which is also known as Tether, for its crude and fuel exports. And so this move is more than anything designed to try to sidestep sanctions that threaten to freeze their sale proceeds in foreign banks, because the U.S. Treasury Department recently allowed PDVSA's general license to expire without renewing it, citing a lack of electoral reforms in the country. And so what this does is it requires customers and providers to wrap up transactions by the end of May. And so companies must now wait to get individual U.S. authorization to deal with PDVSA. And Venezuela's oil minister noted that digital currencies might become the preferred method of payment under some contracts, mostly because transacting in USDT or other digital currencies rather than the US dollar removes that layer of the ability of the US Treasury Department to sanction not just this company, but companies like it. And so, you know, interestingly, the global oil market, which traditionally favors the US dollar for transactions, this is really an emerging trend and points towards the complexities of operating in the current international global environment where the U.S. has been sanctioning countries that it sees as not operating in the best interest of the global order. And so to accommodate these changes, they're now demanding, PDVSA is demanding that new customers hold cryptocurrency in a digital wallet. So why is that interesting? Well, could it point to a further use of cryptocurrency beyond where it's currently used? Maybe. I think I've been saying for some time, a lot of people have been saying for some time, that primarily the use of cryptocurrency has been money laundering and avoiding sanctions. This seems to be a furtherance of that use case. But to me, it's interesting in that, you know, these countries that are now seeing a way to get past U.S. sanctions have created a new business, because most customers of this company aren't going to hold digital wallets. It means that there are going to be trading houses and intermediaries that come in that both reduce Venezuelan oil's proceeds, profits, and also take profits for themselves. So, you know, as investors, this raises several considerations, because the integration of digital currencies in major state-level transactions could signal broader acceptance, maybe not for a good reason. But It also, if this becomes the predominant use case, means that cryptocurrency will see a lot more regulatory scrutiny moving forward. I'm Luke Guerrero, and this completes another episode of the Invest Talk program. We thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads. Get yours anytime at iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. And remember to tell your friends that the Invest Talk podcast is now available in video on our YouTube channel. Search Invest Talk, and don't forget, that's two T's. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president, and Justin Klein is chief executive officer of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.